Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Monday, June 3rd. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. You may not realize it, but your car could be a goldmine of information for marketers and insurers. There are ways to protect your privacy, though they come with trade-offs. We'll explain. And then, the U.S. is spending billions to supercharge domestic chip making. Big companies making advanced chips are getting a boost, but there are limits to what that money can do. Our reporter Asa Fitch will join us with details. We're talking about cars first. Many vehicles today and their related phone apps are packed with safety and convenience features. But those features and others can have a dark side. They can track a lot of information, including the places you go, how fast you drive, even what music or podcasts you listen to. The technology-focused nonprofit Mozilla Foundation examined the privacy practices of 25 car brands and found most car makers collect personal information, give customers little control over it, and may sell or share it with others. Bart Ziegler wrote about this for The Wall Street Journal, and he joins us now. So Bart, what regulations or guidelines exist around car companies collecting personal data?
Well, the car industry itself has a long document that states what car makers can collect, what they can do with it, what the consumers can do with it to opt out of various data. But this information for the car industry is actually voluntary. The Federal Trade Commission actually, in just a few weeks ago in May, said it was looking at what car makers are doing with this data and basically said that car makers, quote, do not have the free license to monetize people's information beyond purposes needed to provide the requested product or service. In other words, they're saying you can't just sell this information to anybody.
What of the six biggest vehicle sellers in the U.S., that's Ford, General Motors, Toyota, Stellantis, Honda, and Hyundai, said about the collection of drivers' personal data?
Well, they all say they realize that privacy is a concern of consumers and that vehicles today collect an awful lot of data on drivers and on the car itself. And they realize that they have to be cognizant of this and careful with it. Almost all of them say that car owners can opt out of much of this data collection, or if not opting out of the data collection, they can opt out of the sharing of it, and that they are doing more to look at the situation. They say they back the moves in Congress to establish the National Data Privacy Law, in part because they're concerned that a number of states have come out with their own differing privacy laws, and that could cause complications in the car market.
You spoke with privacy experts. What do they say is needed to protect owners' data?
The first thing they say is that car owners and drivers should have a lot more control over both what the car collects as far as data and what is done with it by the car maker. They're particularly concerned when car makers ask consumers whether they can sell some of this data or share it to other parties. The privacy people are concerned that this means car makers could be selling it to data brokers that could in turn use it for marketing purposes. And they also say they're concerned that it could end up with insurance companies that could try to track what consumers do in the car, how they drive, et cetera, and possibly affect the insurance rates that people pay.
Okay, let's talk about this a little bit from the driver's perspective or from the car owner's side. How do you know what data is being collected and what's being done with it?
Well, that's one thing that privacy experts criticize. They say it's not clear enough that though the car makers do issue sometimes voluminous privacy policies, there's some vagaries and some not spelled out things. So you certainly should look at what your car maker provides. Most car companies put their privacy policies on their websites or on the apps that come with cars. And you should actually, when you're buying a car, ask the car dealer, what data can I have turned off? What data collection can I opt out of? And what can't I? So that you go into this more clear-eyed about what the car is collecting.
And what steps can you take if you do want to limit the data collection?
Certain car makers say you can actually turn much of it off. The issue is these data collection devices and location collection devices provide a lot of useful services. If you turn off your location collecting on your phone app or on the car, that means you can't get navigation on your map anymore. You can't get turn-by-turn directions. And there are some more serious things. Car makers point out that some of these data systems can detect when you've been in an accident and actually call an ambulance for you. If you turn off the location data, it can't do that. It's really a trade-off. You have to think of whether I want to give up some privacy for some of these pretty useful services.
That was WSJ contributor Bart Ziegler. Coming up, the CHIPS Act allocated $53 billion to boost U.S. semiconductor building. 2 years on, where is that money going? We'll tell you after the break.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. oracle.com/wallstreet.
The CHIPS Act passed in 2022 to jumpstart U.S. semiconductor manufacturing. Just 2 years in, though, it's becoming clear that the $53 billion effort is being challenged by fast-growing chip industries abroad and the sheer expense of making chips. For more on that, we're joined by our semiconductors reporter, Asa Fitch. Asa, the U.S. is working to boost its domestic chip-making capabilities. President Biden talked about this in his State of the Union this year. But other countries are also working on this. So where is the U.S. expected to land in the global race?
So the U.S. is doing a lot to boost its manufacturing of the most advanced chips. In that arena, this CHIPS Act effort has, if you talk to industry executives and analysts, has gone pretty well. Other parts of the industry, it's more of a mixed bag, and the money can't solve every problem in terms of shoring up the domestic chip supply chain.
What percentage is the U.S. expected to make up of the chips market?
So in 2020, the U.S. had about 12% of the global chip making capacity. This CHIPS Act effort is expected to raise that total to about 14% by 2032.
Let's talk a little bit about where things stand. The CHIPS Act outlined $39 billion in direct grants for chip factories, and it received hundreds of applications. So far, where is that funding mostly going?
So the funding mostly now is going to these big companies. Intel, which is the U.S.'s largest chip maker by revenue, is getting $8.5 billion. And then Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, which is the largest contract manufacturing company in the world, is getting over $6 billion to build some chip factories in Arizona. Then you have Samsung, the South Korean major chip manufacturer. They're getting more than $6 billion. And also Micron, which makes memory chips, and they're getting more than $6 billion too.
A March spending bill did direct $3.5 billion of the CHIPS Act money to be reserved for secure project making defense industry chips. And that's expected to go to Intel. How has that impacted the overall rollout of the funding?
The idea initially with the funding was that there were going to be these big grants because chip making is expensive, but there was going to be also a lot of money for things like commercial research and development, that big projects that could help companies invest in research and bring together a lot of their partners to think about what's next for chips and chip making and try to make the next best chips. So that grant for the defense project led the body that's overseeing these grants to not give money to some of these commercial R&D projects. And of course, the companies that expected to receive money under these things were not pleased with that. And it kind of disrupted the strategy of distributing these funds that had been carefully planned by the CHIPS program office within the Commerce Department that's handing out these grants.
Asa, a single advanced chip fabrication plant fab can cost more than $20 billion. Given that scale, what impact can $39 billion in grant funding have?
Yeah, that's one of the kind of distinctive features about the CHIPS Act and this industry itself. It's very expensive. If people see a price tag of $39 billion of grants, the overall cost of the program is $53 billion roughly. These seem like big figures, and they are big figures, obviously. But for an industry where building a basic advanced chip plant these days is tens of billions of dollars, you know, that money really, it can't fundamentally go that far. And some people predict that it's going to take hundreds of billions of dollars, really, of more investment to move the industry forward in a relative sense globally and reinvigorate it, shore up the supply chain, address a lot of the problems that have cropped up that people hope the CHIPS Act would help address.
So if more funding isn't approved by Congress, is there another way companies might find money for chip building?
Yeah, I mean, it should be noted that it's tough to get this kind of funding, this kind of grant program through Congress, because it is a big dollar figure, and it requires a legislative effort that can take years, and the CHIPS Act took years to get through. So a lot of people in the industry are now looking at more sustained mechanisms, more sustained incentives, like a tax credit system that's also is in place under the CHIPS Act, where you can get a 25% tax credit on equipment purchases, you know, manufacturing equipment that you need to manufacture chips. You essentially get a big discount on it. And that could be more of a ongoing mechanism to help support the growth of the industry in the longer term. That credit does expire, though, in 2026. So that's kind of the next effort for the industry, it seems, is to make these tax breaks more permanent and potentially extend the things that are eligible under the tax breaks so they can benefit, you know, more parts of the industry going forward.
That was our semiconductors reporter, Asa Fitch. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.